Hump Day on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin and Ailish. Kind of feels like a hump day today. Midweek blues.
Does it?
Well, kind of. Just like a lackluster evening.
There's a time of year, Christmas, post-Christmas, where you don't really know what day it is. I think Leafs playoff kind of falls into that.
It's either a game day or not a game day.
I tell you what, based on the schedule that we have through games 3 to 7, it's going to be hard to keep track of what day is which.
So let's just start with that before we get into the game. There were some question marks about how this playoff series was going to be structured. Tuesday, Thursday here in Toronto, and then Sunday at 6:30 p.m. in Florida. Not a Saturday night, which, you know, if you do the math, should be a perfect lineup for that. A Sunday, 6:30 p.m. snooze fest.
And then Wednesday,
and
another
then
couple days
Wednesday,
off.
Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I get it because I'm aware that F1 is in Miami this weekend.
Oh, that's what the
holdup is? It's certainly
a
factor. Like, that place is going to be a zoo.
And I guess that kind of affects the mass exodus from Toronto to Tampa Bay in terms of flooding that, what do they call it, FLA Live?
You mean Sunrise?
Yeah, their arena.
Yeah.
Like getting a lot of fans there. I mean,
yeah. So I think there's a lot going on in that city that weekend, but still, like, come on.
It's got to be a US TV thing, I would imagine.
Anyway, it seems like it's going to spread the series out.
Yeah. We are, in fact, going to July again.
We might be. But the Heat don't play. They play Saturday night at home. So if that's what you're, well, Saturday is 3:30 p.m. So if that's what you're kind of buffering around, Knicks and Heat, game 3, and then Monday for them. So I guess they're trying to spread it out. But it just seems like a long, sleepy series with days off in between.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, I mean, disappointed. You want to hang out with buddies and watch the game with a couple pops on a Saturday night. Like, I get all that for sure.
No Saturday night hockey games in this series.
No, you'll have to settle for the Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights.
I mean, I will say, I think we get pretty lucky. Always like 7 p.m. starts. There's none of these 4 p.m. games that the West Coast has to play just to make the East Coast TV viewing happy.
We're definitely a privileged bunch.
So we can't really complain too much. Like, I think this is the first time that we've ever been up in arms about a schedule because they have to play Sundays. But still, we're just spoiled a little bit. So
yeah, we are. But I mean, demand is demand. And there's a big population of people that want to watch the Leafs in prime time. And unfortunately, it's not Saturday night where it's truly prime time.
That Kraken Stars game was probably a bit more.
You're not bothered by this at all, huh?
I said my piece.
Okay.
Nonetheless, I don't have to schedule these things, which is way above my pay grade, so sorry to them. But that Kraken Stars game last night might have been stealing the viewers. 5-4 Kraken OT win. Joe Pavelski returns from injury, scores 4 goals, all 4 of the Dallas Stars goals he scores, and then they lose an OT. How defeating is that?
Scoring 4 goals and losing the game is a really, really tough. Like, I don't even know how you act in the dressing room. Like, it's got to be a little awkward. You have a bunch of stories.
Sorry, buddy. I'm sorry about that. We blew it. But the Kraken get a win and the Panthers get a win. The Dogs.
Yeah. Not a great night
for the Road Dogs.
Those betting chalk in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
God, unless you had Bunker's Bracket, who picked all the Dogs. So we'll get into that. It's on my Instagram. Sorry, folks. He picked the Leafs. He picked the Panthers to beat the Leafs 4 different times. I tried to script it out. I put salami on the paper, and he still picked the Panthers.
Yeah, the problem with that is you haven't given him any salami. He doesn't even know that it tastes good.
He knows the smell of salami.
It could have been like, I don't know, vinegar. I told you to use cayenne pepper on your record so he wouldn't go and chomp on him. Maybe he has no idea that salami is actually
a good tasting thing. I think a dog can smell salami and be interested in it. Like, it's like when you're cooking bacon, you're telling me they're not like, what's this thing on the stove?
What you should have done is salami on the Leafs, regular dog treat on the Panthers if you wanted to, you know, wait the coin flip.
I mean, it looks like it's aging well after one night. Leafs drop game 1. Stars drop game 1. Maybe the unpredictable dog parlay could have been good for you. And the Blue Jays lose last night. So
hey, not a great night.
Vibes are a little low, but we're going to chat with you at 7:30. So maybe you can help bring them up, or you can help validate that it was kind of a disappointing start, nonetheless, to game one for a lot of opportunities for the Maple Leafs and for the Stars. We'll have your calls at 7:30. The Leafs hotline is open. We're going to be doing this post all of the games this series, I believe. We'll give you the numbers for that. But at 7:30, we'll chat with you. We got Kipper at 7, so he'll bring the heat and round out our guests in the end of the show.
I think, well, we got to get into it here. I think we're falling into the same trap as the Maple Leafs. I almost feel like there's a forgiving tone from us here 6 minutes in. I think we were ranting and raving, full out, head exploding after game one versus Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And that may be the reflection of what we saw last night, where it's just like there's a little complacency. It was like, oh, this is less important for whatever reason because it's round two. It felt like that in the stadium. Mm-hmm. It felt like that watching the team. I guess we're not all that. I mean, we're going to get into it, but we're not like terrible, freaking out at the
effort that they had. Well, they also didn't lose 7-3 or 7-2.
They were really, really bad against Tampa, worse. But that was a really disappointing night. Mm-hmm. Really, really disappointing to see them kind of act like that was a mid-December night. Like, that felt like a mid-December vibe from start to finish. And I think everyone's a little bit to blame for it.
I certainly think that it's a different vibe than losing game one of round one, game one of round two. And maybe that's the problem, is because
I think so.
We talked about this yesterday, about what is the different intensity levels that both of these teams are going to come in with, right? The Florida Panthers just did something unthinkable. Nobody believed that they were going to be the Boston Bruins, and they did it from behind. They come into round two, they're either going to be emotionally depleted a little bit because of how much they had to scratch their way through that series, or riding a high. And they've been playing the same style of hockey now for a month, right? They had to get their way into the playoffs. They had to fight their way through the Boston Bruins. Now they roll into Toronto like with a little bit of, I don't know, looseness, right? An aggressive style of hockey, but loose, where the Maple Leafs get through this first round. Everybody has this relief off their shoulders. And I said it was one of my points of concern yesterday, cautious concern, that they might take their foot off the gas a little bit. And I feel like last night there's just a bit of an intensity discrepancy between both teams, the Maple Leafs falling short.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw it the exact same way. Like, I thought Florida was kind of sleepwalking a little bit through that game. Like, they were really good at times, too. Mm-hmm. They had a couple stretches, especially in the first period. It looked like they could double their lead. I don't think they were that good, though.
I think there's a difference between being good, but being like hungry and carefree and playing fast. Like, that's a different style
carefree.
Of hockey.
I think carefree looks way better on them than it does the Leafs 100%. In this moment, because one is an underdog playing mm-hmm. on the road after, as you outlined, a really emotional and draining victory, you would think. And it was just like, okay, let's feeling out process here. Let's get into the series. How the Maple Leafs treated that game, at least it seemed, like it was less important than any game in the Tampa Bay series is beyond me. I mean, you finally get through. You have the opportunity in front of you where you're playing a lesser team. And let's be honest, if there's one takeaway from that, is that the Leafs are so much better than this team. And if they lose, it is a complete and utter disaster. It is a complete disaster if they don't go to an Eastern Conference final. Because Tampa Bay is one note. They are one dimensional. They are not that good. If you trip up against this team.
Did you say Tampa Bay?
I said Tampa Bay there?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, if you lose to Florida, it's a mm-hmm. major disaster. It's
just the state of Florida in general here.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't go 2-for-2, it's bad. Because they are not as good as you. They are not even close. And you played right into their hand. I get why Florida would have a feeling out process, mm-hmm. but why Toronto wouldn't approach that game like, we've got to do exactly what we did against Tampa. We know what it feels like to win. We know what it looks like. We know what we have to do to win. Why they devolved into a mid-December feel, allowing Florida to dictate terms, is beyond me. I don't even understand how we saw the performance that we saw from them last night.
So great flashes from both teams, right? This wasn't a cakewalk or a rolling over of any team, right? There was certainly periods, but I think where the Maple Leafs fell short is their self-inflicted wounds, and they didn't capitalize on opportunities. Like, they could have easily won this game multiple times, right? Mm-hmm. They had that game on their stick. They had opportunities. Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be, I think, a surprise storyline here. Vezina, Sergei Bobrovsky, you laid this out yesterday. He was one of your X factors, right? What mm-hmm. kind of Bobrovsky are we going to get? Well, if you're going to get that level of Bobrovsky every night, it's a completely different
trouble.
Series.
Yeah.
He was the better goaltender in the night. They had the best player on the ice in Matthew Tkachuk, and they had the best defenseman, Brandon Montour, who just literally is, I don't know, otherworldly right now, right? So mm-hmm. you look at, that's basically there's three reasons why you lost the game. But I don't think that this is a complete, utter disappointment or failure for the Maple Leafs, because they did play better at many, many facets of this game for long stretches of the game. But sometimes you're just not getting the bounces, or you're up against a hot goaltender, right? So I don't think that there's like a mass level of concern for me. And maybe that has to do with the fact that it's, you know, round two, they got six other games ahead, right? Mm-hmm. But you cannot be thinking that complacency going into Thursday night, right?
And even the effort was probably good enough. Like, let's say that game happens seven times. I'm very confident mm-hmm. that the Leafs would win four games. They might win three, but I probably more likely they'd win four.
Yep.
But in my eyes, it should not be that close.
No.
It should not even be close to being that close. And I think, yeah, they just have to assert themselves more into the series because you have that advantage, and for whatever reason, they didn't. Let's start with Tkachuk, because you said unequivocally best player on the ice.
Yeah.
And the underlying numbers would probably show that, like dominant. Own the puck. But here's my thing with Matthew Tkachuk, and I recognize that he could be nominated for the Hart Trophy. He could be one of the 10 best players in the world, maybe. But 85% of the ice, he's a virtual non-factor. And this is what kind of bothers me about the approach and him dominating a game and him being allowed to dominate a game. And really, Sheldon Keefe's tactics. Yeah, I thought Sheldon Keefe had a horrible night. But we'll get to that through Matthew Tkachuk here. He is not Connor McDavid, where if you make a mistake in the offensive mm-hmm. zone, the puck's in the net 4 seconds later. That is not what Matthew Tkachuk offers. He offers strong offensive play, deep and down low, and he's a nightmare in front of the net, and he's a nightmare to play with after the whistles. But Matthew Tkachuk's at his best is only at his best when he's deep in the offensive zone. Yeah, he might, you know, he's probably a competent player defensively. He can make a good pass in the neutral zone, but elite level stuff happens in one area of the ice for Matthew Tkachuk. So what would be the best way to combat that? It would probably be to play in the offensive zone, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't let Matthew Tkachuk go to the spots where he's most effective. And it seemed like the Leafs' strategy was to try to absorb what Matthew Tkachuk was doing rather than make him play on the defensive. Mm. And that really seems like backwards logic to me. They let Matthew Tkachuk be Matthew Tkachuk last night. And again, I don't know if he was that great. Maybe that just kind of tells you about the overall performance of the game, that no one really stood out that much. But yeah, if you look at the numbers, you look at the stat line, Matthew Tkachuk dominated the game. And I feel like there's like no excuse for him to dominate the game, because you have an answer for that. Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is your best players, the guy who is better than Matthew Tkachuk, in Austin Matthews. And what I really, really hated most about the game was what Sheldon Keefe did early. Austin Matthews had six shifts in the first period. Two of those shifts were in the first 5 minutes on power plays. He had one shift to start the game. So in the final 15 minutes of the first period, Austin Matthews saw the ice three times. Matthew Tkachuk, I think, had at least double, six mm-hmm. or seven. So basically, because you were trying to deal with Tkachuk, you were keeping your own best player on the bench and therefore allowing Matthew Tkachuk to have a massive impact on the period and allow the Florida Panthers to go into the intermission up 1-0.
Especially after the Leafs had opportunities in that first period and they didn't capitalize, right? They had a power play opportunities. Mm-hmm. Like, they started that game pretty red hot.
And that's probably the biggest reason why they lost the game.
Yeah.
Like, they had two great opportunities. They were buzzing
and
on those power plays.
The final minutes
if
of the game.
If it goes in, you're in complete control. But how they reacted to, and how the coach reacted to not scoring on those two power plays, I thought it set them up for failure.
I think certainly that's going to change. Like, you can't roll
it. And it did change in the game.
Yes. And so Thursday, and I know Keefe addressed it post-game too, saying, oh, you know, I made a couple tweaks and things changed. But I mean,
don't pat your back or spell on the back too hard, Sheldon.
Yeah, like, no, I agree.
Like, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, he has been criticized in the past for losing coaching battles. Last year, he lost to John mm-hmm. Cooper in round one. I think he found a way through round one of this series this year against the Tampa Bay Lightning, but you have home ice advantage now. You should not be
and they
losing.
Squandered it once. They've already squandered home ice once.
You should not be losing the battle in game one. I know that probably they thought maybe they'd be playing the bot. That's not an excuse. Like, you knew you're playing the Florida Panthers now for a day or two. It shouldn't be like, oh, we were prepared to handle Matthew Tkachuk. You know who Matthew Tkachuk is. You played them four times this year. You won three of them. You lost one in OT. There isn't really an excuse for being out-coached or outline matched, and you
or just galaxy braining the situation.
And that's a Sheldon Keefe staple, is galaxy braining.
And so, bad starts. This is the pattern. It's like,
but they lost game one of round one and they ended up winning the series.
They did, and they made adjustments, but I don't understand why this group, it's got to be on Sheldon Keefe. We talked about it last time when they lost against Tampa Bay. Like, over analysis, way too much in their head. Like, what are they, what is the objective here? Is it to play or to try and outthink the opponent? The way they've started the last two regular seasons, if there's like a little time for Sheldon Keefe to influence or have like an initial read on a series or a season, it's always bad. Mm-hmm. I don't, and he makes the change, and obviously that's good. And I guess you could deduce from the changes that, okay, he wants Mitch Marner out on the ice against Matthew Tkachuk. Okay, so it didn't work with John Tavares. You make the change, you go to Austin Matthews. But like immediately, you are allowing Matthew Tkachuk to dictate terms on this entire series when you should be empowering Austin Matthews to dictate terms on this entire series. And that's why I think he's got it wrong. And I don't think, pat yourself on the back. Adjustment, second period, you're so much better. Well, you didn't win the game. And it's still backwards logic with Austin Matthews not being given the opportunity to go out there and play against anyone. He is freaking out about a line that has Nick Cousins on it.
Goal scorer.
Nick Cousins should not strike fear into your heart. This isn't Leon, Connor, and Evander Kane. It's not. You should be comfortable putting any player on the ice against that line, and he's scared of Matthew Tkachuk. It's a problem.
Okay, so that changes Thursday, let's just say, and it should, and I think they...
Well, it changes with Marner and Matthews playing together, and John Tavares and William Nylander not getting it done again.
So that's certainly a factor that the Maple Leafs lost the game, but, you know, you can't put it all on Sheldon Keefe's shoulders.
I'll put a lot of it on it.
Okay, not all of it. There's certainly other reasons that they lost the game. Nobody really stood out from the Maple Leafs performance-wise in terms of taking this game and running with it. How did they finish that series against Tampa? Like, they played free and hard, and Sheldon Keefe gave them that opportunity. So, yes, you're making a valid point about Sheldon Keefe just not galaxy braining it in game six. But, I mean, I wouldn't say it was an overwhelming performance by the core four. I wouldn't say that they went without defensive issues or goaltending mistakes or, you know, I still think everybody can elevate another level. And 100%. Sheldon Keefe can put them in that position. So I think it's hand in hand.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a carefree approach, right? Mm-hmm. Like, was Jake McCabe jumping up into the rush five times a game and try to step up to make hits another five times against the Tampa Bay Lightning in game six when everything was on the line? No, and I think that's another thing that really bothered me about the approach was you just learned about what it took to beat Tampa Bay. You just felt it two, three nights ago. You just felt what the approach needs to be to win a game where there's no margin for error. And you know, or should know, that Florida's only chance to beat you is to create this track meet wide open, exchanging chances, and allow Sergei Bobrovsky to be the better goaltender in the series. That's the only way Florida can beat you, at least in my opinion, and I think they should believe that too. And they completely abandoned everything that you were doing in those really tight parameters that got you through the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was very strange. There was like a real, hey, let's just dip our toes into the water here, see what it feels like, we'll make some adjustments, and we'll be fine. I don't understand why you're not the one setting the parameters,
tone. They should have been setting the tone, and like, there's no excuse for coming out and letting Florida.
Yeah, Tampa on the brain, yeah.
God, it's just letting Florida control the play. But they, once again, I still think there was really good positive moments.
You are surprisingly positive.
I'm not. I think I'm just a bit more level-headed. It's game one. Like, we just pinpointed, Keefe needs to figure it out. I think that they...
Are we going to excuse Sheldon Keefe for being brutal every single game one that we've seen?
I'm not going to have the whole morning narrative about Sheldon Keefe being
a coach. Okay, let's move on to something else. There are other things that were bad.
Yeah, so let's move on to other things. Let me say one positive thing. I think that Matthew Nyes is continuing to be a massive impact on this team. He got his first goal last night. And, I mean, yeah, it's a small factor, but the kid looks great. I'm happy for him. He got his first ever NHL goal in a great moment on home ice in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just going to bode well for the kid's confidence. Michael Bunting got a goal. He's helping erase the narrative of what happened last series.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that there's a lot more to give from the core four. If you lost that game and everybody played the best they could, I think we'd be having a different conversation. Like, everybody can play better. There's a 6 more games in this series.
God, I'm fighting the urge to not spin this into a Sheldon Keefe criticism again.
Just stop. I won't do it with Sheldon Keefe.
Well, I mean, it is one of the primary stories of the game.
I know.
We could do all flowers and roses and nice things.
No. That's all I wanted to say flower-wise.
Okay, so Matthew Nyes, yeah. It's awesome. He's fitting in with... remember that it was like, oh, we can't trust him in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. 8 games ago, and now he's playing with Austin Matthews. And I will say... is that part of the reason why Austin Matthews is not playing against Matthew Tkachuk? Maybe. Or at least didn't start because, oh, he got Matthew Nyes. I mean, there could be an issue there, right?
He still needs to figure out his defensive zone. Like, Matthew Nyes is
100%
a full level of confidence back there. But he's also 20.
But another point, I think you just trust it. Because, yeah, he's made mistakes. And there were a couple little speed wobbles with him last night. But more often than not, if you just give him more, he gives you more. That's just really that's the truth of the matter so far through 8 games in his Stanley Cup playoff career.
Okay, so things that, besides Sheldon Keefe, that we can pinpoint as areas of weakness for the Maple Leafs.
Mark Giordano?
Yeah, he's basically 1B to A. He looks he looked rough. He got exposed last night. This is going to be a faster series too, right? The game one, you're feeling each other out. I know that you should be ready to rumble game one, but, I mean, there's still a process of both teams. Okay, now this is our new opponent. The Florida Panthers are faster and I would say at times tougher in tough areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think that the older players got exposed a little bit. John Tavares, you were sitting beside me.
You got the full Justin Cuthbert experience watching John Tavares.
You kept raising very valid points. And the point was, has John Tavares had a plus play yet? A play of...
I don't know if I was going to bring that to air, but yeah.
Oops.
He didn't.
No, and that's fine.
Basically, production went to die on the stick of John Tavares last night. And everyone has their people, right, that they, like, criticize. Mm-hmm. Like, if you listen to Leafs talk last night, there's a lot of William Nylander.
Yeah.
With me, it goes back to John Tavares. Because the difference between Nylander and Tavares, they both didn't have good nights. But remember when William Nylander had that rush, stopped up, and, like, didn't realize the guy fell into the corner and he had a clear path to the net? Like, at least he created that, right? Like, John Tavares can't create that.
Mm-hmm.
John Tavares is like Matthew Tkachuk, 85% of the ice. It's not anything close to elite.
So I think that John Tavares exposed a little bit about last night.
He didn't have a good game.
But Giordano, as you bring up, definitely did not have
The Giordano thing's probably more pressing. However, I think it's easier to cover up. Like, if the Leafs just play that really, really diligent, disciplined brand of hockey, you're not going to have the Carter Verhaeghe's of the world and Sam Reinhart's of the world and Sam Bennett's of the world coming at him with full steam. Like, there was too much off rush, transition, opportunity for Florida. It was exactly what they wanted, and the Maple Leafs gave it to them. And Mark Giordano's a sitting duck if he's trying to make plays in open space against guys that are 15 years younger than him. That's just the reality.
I don't feel like there's a strong chance that he's not put back in the lineup on Thursday. Like, I think that that's going to be the way they go. But
so you think he'll be there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's like a handedness thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the handed and the veteran presence and a guy that, you know, has been pretty steady. But last night was an opportunity for the Florida Panthers to see, hey, they got some slower, older guys. And, like, maybe Tampa didn't exploit that as much, but Florida certainly can. So Giordano was an area of concern.
Definitely. But he wasn't alone. Like, Jake McCabe was responsible for the 2 back-breaking goals. The Leafs come back to tie the game. There's suddenly life in the building. And it was, again, it was mid-December for the fans, too. Let's be honest. Like, it was not...
Which is disappointing. You waited 19 years to experience round 2 hockey. And when they were buzzing in the very first 5 minutes of the game, the atmosphere was great.
And the Leafs, admittedly, did not give them much cheer
100%. You can't manifest excitement. But for
everyone involved, right, it should escalate. It should get more and more and more and more
100%.
And more. And, you know, we saw the elevation throughout the Tampa series, and then we started from scratch again last night, it feels like. Like, in every way, the Leafs started from scratch last night. And that's kind of, I mean, I guess there's a learning process through everything. Learning process just to get through one round. But now a learning process of how to conduct yourself through an entire postseason. Because, frankly, the two steps forward, one step back, I mean, that might add up in your mind. But it might not add up in postseason.
Yeah, you got to give the fans certainly something to get fired up about. But I was kind of like, people would die for these tickets, and this is experience that you've waited forever for. Like, just cheer.
It wasn't there. We did get off on a tangent there. It was about Jake McCabe.
Yes.
They tied it up, the two, but he just gets way too over-anxious. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to make a play when that's not your job, right? Nothing was more representative of Tampa getting what they want than Jake McCabe jumping up in the play, right?
Tampa.
Did I say it again?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That Florida getting what they want.
It's tough.
We might have to have a counter here.
But honestly, like, I think now that we've said it three times on the show, it's like you can't stop. Buddy, it's ingrained in your brain.
I'm happy it's only three. I thought it might be like
I might have been five plus for me already. For you.
Anyway, nothing more representative. God, I was making a good point too.
Just start again.
Nothing more representative of the Florida Panthers getting what they want than Jake McCabe jumping up in the play. Like, you're welcoming their game. How else are they going to beat you without trading chances openly in open ice?
I wonder if it's Jake McCabe just trying to make like his moment on the series. He's a new face, and he didn't have the greatest start to round one. He rounded into form near the end. Same with Brody. Obviously, Morgan Riley has been the defensive story, right? I don't think that he's trying to do that to outplay his own teammate, but I think he's trying to have his moment. Like, Luke Shen looked great.
Well, if you're trying to have your moment, Jake.
No. I don't think it's the right way to go about, but I'm thinking maybe it's like, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to make like a moment, get this crowd going, I'm going to hit someone, I'm going to do something outside of what he should be. Like, he's playing outside of what his role is. And I think that might have to do with the excitement, the playoff, like make a statement, like this guy can do something to ignite this team instead of being the Jake McCabe that they need. Right. And we saw, I think there's multiple times last night where we're like, damn, Luke Shen is a good steady force. And he knows how to make those step up plays where he crushes someone into next week, where he has his physicality that's contained. I think Jake McCabe's
still
trying to
landed some really good hits.
Yeah,
and we saw that in the first game against Tampa too, where he made that hit and he just got like distracted. Like,
see, I think it's just like buzzing. There's too much in his.
He gets carried away.
Yeah, and I don't know.
He definitely got carried away. He of 25 career goals was trying to score the goal to put them ahead of the Florida Panthers.
I mean, yeah, I'm like, do I want him to be way too reserved and way too complacent, or do I want him to overdo it? Like, I don't want either option. I don't know the answer to that, but
I just
trying
think
to do too much is a problem.
The first step should be back when in doubt.
Yeah, you do play defense.
Want my positive from the game?
I didn't think you had one.
Oh, you're like, you just want to like sing the praises of this team after a loss.
I do not want to sing the praises. I just want to be level-headed this morning.
Well, I'm not level-headed.
Okay, so
the biggest positive was that they looked like the physically superior team, and I don't think we've ever seen the Maple Leafs appear that way. Mm-hmm. And I was bracing for a team in the Florida Panthers that was going to try to drag this game into the mud and make it really nasty and gritty, and I didn't see that at all.
Yeah.
And then I saw the Leafs, like, capitalizing on physicality.
Couldn't capitalize on the power play.
The step-ups from... And that's probably the next thing we should get to. And I think that was semi-positive, so I won't be completely negative. But yeah, I mean, a lot of open ice hits, and that's like kind of the window dressing. But all throughout, the worry pretty much every time the Leafs play a big game is that they're going to be overmatched physically, that if a team wants to really drag it and make it nasty and ugly, that it favors the other team. And I didn't even get a whiff of that. Like, I thought the Leafs were physically superior, and they could use that to their advantage. And honestly, it was probably the most surprising thing of the night. Like, they looked like the bigger, stronger, more capable team. And that was kind of a nice surprise.
Well, think about how game one and two went against Tampa. It was a tire fire of fights and scrums and suspensions and bad hits and desperation because both teams were getting blown out. And back-to-back nights. Tampa comes in, rolls over the Maple Leafs, and it got really messy. Next game, same kind of thing, but Maple Leafs get that opportunity. This game was just a bit more like, not mellow, but mellow in a sense. There wasn't those huge moments of something that led to chaos. And I don't know, maybe that helped, that bodes well for the Maple Leafs because no one's acting out of character. Michael Bunting did really well in this situation.
Michael Bunting's quiet as a church mouse right now.
And I think that... I think Matthew Tkachuk would love to get in some people's faces and, you know, cause a scene, but everybody just kind of behaved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so different than the way that the Tampa Bay series started. So it's just, it's contrast.
Yeah, and the game probably dictates part of that. And maybe Matthew Tkachuk is saving some of it.
He didn't need to start that last night because he was finding other ways to be productive.
No, and I will say the physicality that the Leafs showed was all within the rules and within the whistles. And that's the big positive there, is that it's not like, okay, you just have Luke Shen going out there trying to fight everyone. Mm-hmm. No, you just were the harder team when you were actually playing the hockey game, which was nice.
Okay. Power play. Different, completely different story, obviously. If the Maple Leafs find a way to capitalize in the first two back-to-back power plays that they get in the game where the crowd's still in it, the momentum's there. And I thought it was a well-officiated game. A couple, like, it wasn't chaos.
Paul Maurice, maybe not.
We're not, yeah, we'll talk about that. We're not coming in here and that's the storyline, right? And that's kind of nice for a playoff game. But the Maple Leafs just, they squandered opportunities to take advantage of the advantages they're given. But I wouldn't say that the power play looked horrid.
No, I would say
that Sergei Bobrovsky is still certainly, like I've laid it out early, a factor to why Maple Leafs lost this game. And I don't know how much you can rely on him to play this way lights out for seven games if they goes to seven, but he certainly stole a lot of opportunities for Maple Leafs to go ahead. So he gets some credit.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest keys to the series, 100%. Because you can tell why Florida was running at a 58% penalty kill rate entering the series. Toronto had a lot of chances. They had a lot of opportunities. Those power plays looked pretty good. They could have easily resulted in goals. They could have been up 2-0. They could have been on their way. They could have been way up in this series and were nothing but positive.
Yeah.
But Bobrovsky makes the saves, and some of the opportunities were squandered. And the timing of the power plays, at least the first two, all of them, really. There was one late, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like Paul Maurice flashing the 5-1. And again, this is a big thing for him because he understands if they give up too many power plays or penalties, I guess, it's over. It is over because they cannot kill penalties and the Maple Leafs have a really good power play. So he's reminding them on the way out. But if you actually look at the penalties, too early, they were penalties.
Yep.
The double minor late. Is that two more penalties? That's a penalty. And after that, it was only 2-1 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like there was a major discrepancy. The calls were just. And it's on the Maple Leafs to convert, obviously, but do everything in your power. Play in the offensive zone as much as you can and draw these opportunities because that is clearly the biggest weakness with the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
They cannot kill penalties. They were lucky to survive five power plays for the Maple Leafs. And if the Maple Leafs get five power plays per game, I love their chances.
Yeah, they'll break through. Mm-hmm. They'll break through. But, I mean, Bobrovsky made some pretty damn good saves, especially down at the final minutes of the game. Last 2 minutes and 30 seconds, he made 8 saves, and a lot of them were stunning. So, you know, one of those goes in early in the game. You get one opportunity to capitalize, and on a power play, it's a completely different game that you're not playing from behind. You're not chasing the game. I think the Maple Leafs have a completely different script that they could have fallen through that game, and it just didn't go the way they wanted it to. I still find that Thursday's a great opportunity to bounce back, but it starts to feel like a must-win game already, right? Like, it's like you're going to go 0-2 in your own barn.
Yeah, you need the exact same response that you had against Tampa in game two of the first round.
But I'll say this is where the maturity level and the experience needs to shine through. You just did this in round one, this same kind of script. Did you take anything from that? Did you learn anything from that? What's the difference in the locker room going into Thursday's game when you're down 1-0 in a series to a team from Florida? It should be, we just did this. We came back and won 3 games in OT. We won on the road. We found ways to win games that weren't pretty. So they certainly have the recipe. It's just like, can they deliver Thursday? Can they have a short-term memory and come back and say, hey, we're going to win this in our barn. We're a better team than the Florida Panthers.
What do you think of Mitch Marner?
Yeah, not really a factor for me.
It's becoming a little bit of a pattern, no?
Where he, like, shines and then goes to sleep? Or
like, in the regular season, we had games, and again, that felt like a regular season game, with like, the exception of Mitch Marner being an absolute stud. Like, he was unmistakable every time he was on the ice in the regular season, for the most part. When things were going really well for him, it was like every shift he was dominating out there. And I don't think I saw, and again, a lot of overlap with Matthew Tkachuk. That was Sheldon Keefe's tactic, whether it was Austin Matthews playing the center ice position or John Tavares playing the center ice position. It seemed he wanted Mitch Marner out there against Matthew Tkachuk, and Matthew Tkachuk kind of fed him his lunch. It was not the Selkiest performance that we've ever seen from Mitch Marner, mm-hmm. who of course got nominated for the Selke yesterday. And maybe that's why wingers don't win it, because you can be a really great defensive forward, which Mitch Marner is, but can you stop that line from really doing anything if you're confined to your area of the ice?
Selke is a great nomination and much deserved for Mitch Marner.
There's the positive.
But you got to do it when it matters. These are regular season awards. Who cares if you're not able to perform in the playoffs? So,
and your best defensive play is your offensive play, Mitch. Like, it, we need to see the core. There was one player again played from the core four that impressed. Mm-hmm. It's been off and on for Mitch. It's been off and on for John. It's been off and on for Willie.
Yeah.
It's been mostly on for Austin Matthews, and I thought he was good again. But he needs someone else to get on board with him.
Any lineup changes you would do before game two? It's early.
I wouldn't have made any changes, and I know Sheldon Keefe was so proud of his. What I would have done instead of having either the second line or fourth line see Matthew Tkachuk exclusively, I would have put A, your best line, or B, your checking line against the opposition's best player. Mm-hmm. Like, why did Ryan O'Reilly see very little of Matthew Tkachuk? Why did Austin Matthews see very little of Matthew Tkachuk? It seemed like it was like, okay, we want to do the winger thing. We think the winger thing is more effective. When really, I just think throw your best defensive line or your best line period against mm-hmm. their best would put you in a good spot. So I kind of liked what they started with. They went away from it. He's so proud of it. We're probably going to see the exact same thing. Could Justin Hall get in? Maybe. Timothy Liljegren didn't knock any socks off for me.
I could see that.
And he's
going to
get back in eventually.
Like, I could see that happening. You're responding to a loss, right? If they win Tuesday, then you play again Sunday. Are you going to then put Justin Hall in the lineup that far removed from the last time you played a game? I think if there's a move to be made, maybe not like the move that I'm fired up about. If there was a move, it probably would be that, I would think.
I like the bottom six for the most part for the Leafs.
They were buzzed for a while. They're like,
the fourth line was great early.
Yeah.
And they were getting Tkachuk matchups mm-hmm. early. So they were definitely a positive for most of the game. They kind of faded away when they really had to chase the game. I liked Bunting with O'Reilly. Obviously Matthew Nyes and Austin Matthews mm-hmm. working out together. We're still back to Nylander and Tavares and in Yarncroke, who might be like the three of them struggling for large portions of the series.
Yarncroke has been a zero factor.
It really has.
This entire playoffs.
He's been probably the biggest disappointment. I'm still not sitting him down,
it is so disappointing because he was a big storyline at the end of the regular season, right? Mm-hmm. Matthew says he loves playing with the guy. He was putting up points, how many goals he ended up getting? Career amounts. Like, he was an actual contributor to this team, and I don't know where he went in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's disappointing because it's going to be a depth battle at times. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning had their stars that I think the Leafs are able to extinguish at times, but the Florida Panthers are a different structural team. I mean, if Brandon Montour can score every single night and have the highest shooting percentage ever, Matthew Tkachuk puts the puck in the net. It's like, those are the guys you need to shut down. I don't really know too many other people on the Florida Panthers roster that I'm scared of, right? Mm-hmm.
Another point on Paul Maurice being 5-1 with the chest. They scored on a delayed penalty, so it's really 5-2, and they took advantage of it before they actually got the power play. I would be, back to the original point, I would be more new approach rather than new lineup for now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't think you need to blender it up in terms of who's in the roster and who's up in the press box, but I think you need to deploy differently. All right, anything else from this?
No.
Okay, because we're going to take calls at 7:30. We want to get your thoughts and vibe check this morning. Kipper's going to join us at 7. Haley Salvian at 8. Ed Jovanovsky, right? Mm-hmm. What's his nickname again?
Jovo.
He's going to join us, ex-Panthers captain and current Panthers TV analyst, will join us at 8:30. We have all of that to tee up. Looking forward to hearing your calls because we're working through it too. Like, I mean, I feel like you can take the level-headed approach of this is game one, but certainly there needs to be a level of urgency that we didn't see last night, right? Like, that's just like a non-starter. You cannot roll into Thursday with the idea of, well, we are the better team. You got to respect your opponent and play up to the challenge of this is now something you haven't done before. Like, don't let it slip away. And it could easily, if you don't come out with a little bit of fire on Thursday night, then we'll play Sunday and you get some time to see if you made the right adjustments. All right, let's take a break. We got the A-list on the other side. And don't forget, 7:30. So get in the queue early. We want to hear from as many people as possible. I know we get a lot of callers, a lot of people excited. So you can call in a little bit early and we'll get you queued up for 7:30. A-list next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So John Tavares had a pretty great weekend. He scored the game winner, OT, to send the Maple Leafs into the second round. Also welcomed the birth of his daughter shortly after, like within 12 hours. So very wonderful.
No.
Yeah, it was real.
Didn't he already have the three names on his stick? I think we learned of it.
He had a great week, the birth of his daughter.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone's like, oh, there's an extra initial on his stick.
Their daughter's name is Ray, but I believe she was born this past week as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a newborn.
Yeah.
But I don't think it happened after.
Nonetheless, babies are just popping out here, and a very funny story came out of...
babies just popping out here.
Came out of a list of current Dodgers who have all started to join these paternity leave. So not just one or two, but five current players have all gone on paternity leave in the last week. Mookie Betts, Evan Phillips, Max Muncy, Cody Bellinger, all on the Dodgers last season have all gone on paternity leave this last week. All around what was 9 months ago? MLB All-Star break. So the boys got busy and they're all popping out babies at this time. Five of them at the same time. Very much an outlier. And there's just a lot to celebrate during your week off. So congrats to everybody that's having a baby at the exact same time.
I guess it is. I was like, okay, that's... gives you early August.
It was definitely...
but that was mid-July.
What was...
but, you know, it's been... yeah, the process is, you know, underway.
Nonetheless, congrats to everybody for having babies.
Fantastic.
It's just a beautiful story. Everybody just celebrating.
Shout out team.
Yeah, go team go. Boston Pizza came out with a very fun campaign. Instead of being called Boston Pizza in Toronto, they've jokingly changed their name in the city of Toronto to Austin Pizza with O-N. So no Boston Pizza, Austin Pizza as their little campaign for the remainder of, hopefully, the Maple Leafs playoff run.
Something tells me Boston Pizza was expecting Boston to beat the Florida Panthers.
They had a quick rebrand. I think it would have obviously been a little better if there was Boston here in the city the next couple of days, and they tear down Boston, they put Austin Pizza, but nonetheless.
It is like a small own that our like biggest sports bar chain. I don't know if it is, but it seems to be. It's definitely up there.
Yeah.
Is Boston.
It is tough, isn't it?
Because Boston has had our number.
Maybe that's why. Okay, one more for you. So I think I brought up a story 2 weeks ago about a European soccer club that they lost so poorly. I forget which one it was, that they refunded their fans' tickets.
I believe it was Tottenham?
Yes, yeah, something of that sort. Well, here's another fun soccer story from overseas. So there's a Finland native, Joel Pohjanpalo.
Can't help you on that one.
Believe that that's correct, who plays for an Italian squad. And
what's the squad?
Venezia.
Venezia?
Yeah. So he scored four goals in a game on the weekend. And when he subbed out, he went up to the concession stand and grabbed a couple beers and came down and watched the rest of the game with a couple beers from the concession stand, tarps off, just sat there and enjoyed himself. This is the level of, like, we need this in American culture. Like, this just, they're having a blast over there. The soccer clubs are just doing whatever. Refund the fans. Let me go tarps off, go grab a beer, sit beside the buddies on the bench. I think there was like, they were up five nothing, and he just headed up there and grabbed a couple beers.
It's a good move.
I mean, I think things are a little lower stakes, maybe in the B.
Is it B?
Yeah.
Serie B.
Serie
I don't
B.
know how to say B in Italian. We really need Daniele to pop on with the mispronunciations of Italian teams.
I did my best there.
No, I think we were close enough. But Luke Fox told us yesterday about Ryan O'Reilly just having a Coors Light in the hallway.
Yeah. Like, I didn't get much
beers.
Footage of that.
No.
Like, I was looking for, on Saturday night when the Leafs won, I'm like looking for some sort of champagne shower, someone crushing a pint.
Can't do champagne. But I did see a tweet, I don't know if it was real or not, that a second case was going in. Like, yeah, have a second beer after finally getting through. Just maybe show up against Florida in game one.
See, that if we saw more post-game celebrations on Saturday, would we be coming in and be like, they partied too hard.
That's why we don't see any footage.
See, that's smart. They know what they're doing. One last one I wanted to bring up here, and I think we might have some thoughts in the text line. Our guy, who I don't want it to be our guy, but we talk about him often, Dylan Brooks. Our guy as in local, Dylan Brooks. And someone that we faded continuously in the wake and rake for. Dylan Brooks unders. Played his last game for the Memphis Grizzlies because they reported they will not bring him back under any circumstances. This was Shams from The Athletic who reported that. Not under any circumstances will Dylan Brooks play for the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't think I've ever seen something of the sort where a team is like, get the hell out of our organization. Under any circumstances, you'll not play for our team. I mean, there's a lot of drama that went on with him and LeBron, and like it was embarrassing to watch this because it just felt like he was digging a deeper and deeper and deeper, deeper hole, not talking to the media, then coming out and saying, well, you guys are making me a villain, and then saying like, you know, poke the bear to LeBron James, I'm going to drop 40. It just started to get a little bit out of hand. He's calling LeBron old and LeBron goes off. It's just, it got untenable. And now the Memphis Grizzlies are like, we don't ever want to see your face again.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously came from Shams, the not under any circumstances thing. But like,
he put it in quotes.
What did that quote come from? Did it come from like a team exec who's sharing information? Or was the team like, we want you to say under any circumstances? Because
it kind of felt like they did.
That is embarrassing the player big time. And I guess he may have embarrassed you. I get that. But if you're the bigger person or the organization, which is in fact bigger, do you got to embarrass the guy on the way out? Like, that doesn't, as much as he made it, his whole role, he didn't put a good spotlight on your franchise. Doing the same back to him means you're just cut from the same cloth to me. Like, that was kind of embarrassing to actually
They definitely embarrassed him, but like, did he not deserve like a little bit of, not embarrassment, but
no,
like.
No, just, it's a transaction. We don't want you here anymore, but we're going to, you know, that conversation behind closed doors is probably where it was meant to be.
Okay, I see your point.
Like if you're a free agent, you're like, oh, if it doesn't go well, I'm going to be embarrassed when I'm on the way out.
Well, he needed to act like a pro as well. So both teams, player.
We want heels in sports, and we're like, again, maybe the Memphis Grizzlies don't want heels on their team.
I think it was a distraction for that team. That's what it comes down to. Like,
I think John Morant's issues were a little bit more pressing.
Yeah,
than
you can't
Dylan
really compare
Brooks.
The two of them. One is like a legal issue. I wanted to read one thing from.
I'm saying that about Ja though. Tell you that much.
One thing I wanted to read from a listener who sent this in yesterday, explanation about the tarot cards. Coup de Tête is their handle.
Okay.
So the custom hat makers, they listen to the show. I think it was just a good learning lesson for us. I'm going to read the text.
Okay.
Okay, that reading today was a mess. This is about the tarots.
Yeah, it was.
The monkey. The Two of Wands, when reversed, can have two meanings. You may find that the plans that you laid out for your career path are not going the way that you had envisioned. You may have missed details, and you may have obstacles that you did not foresee. These issues are creating trouble for you now. Alternatively, you may have made all the plans in the world, perhaps drawing out several scenarios and outlined all the risks, but fear may prevent you from taking your first steps. Instead of overanalyzing every single detail, it may be better for you to just take action. One cannot plan for everything. We have to trust in our own ability. This accurately describes the monkey is gone. The answer is in the last sentence. One cannot plan for everything. We have to trust in our own ability. So that's response
okay.
one.
So clearly the tarot cards from a series standpoint did not work out Tampa. But game one was exactly what it said. And game one was exactly what that text was.
Mm-hmm. Let me read two more texts. So they continue. The Ten of Pentacles, so that was another card we pulled, deals with permanence and satisfaction. The card shows that everything you have put your efforts into for a long time will pay off in the future. It suggests that everything will work out well. In the end, you'll have always kept the long-term picture in view, choosing to take no shortcuts. Your legacy is sure to stand for quite a long time to come. This is a relief, for the path to get here has been filled with setbacks and challenges, making this the point of journey even sweeter. So a little more vague, but the spirit's role is that the old man looking at the kids is us. The spirits understand the long road it takes when the kids are just enjoying the moment. The spirits have the big picture in mind, and we hadn't had the same fears and worries, the same setbacks and challenges as a fan base, the victory wouldn't have been as sweet. So this individual certainly is a tarot expert, because they also messaged me saying you cannot buy your own tarot cards. Someone has to buy them for you. So maybe it's a little cursed anyway because I bought them from Amazon. Nonetheless, a very thorough explanation about the cards that comes from someone that clearly knows what they're talking about.
Maybe the problem with our deck is it's only immediate future and not, hey, what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks?
Well, maybe we need to think of better ways to ask the questions. We should inquire we could Coupe de Tête here.
We could definitely
get some hats
in our... Yeah, well, let's get some hats.
Put a couple of hats on when we do the next tarot reading. Well, thanks for the input. We'll take your calls also at 7:30, so don't forget to get in the queue early. That'll be at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or just *590 on Roger's cell phone. Game one, round two. It's uncharted waters for many of us. How are we feeling? Where's your point of concern, your point of confidence? We want to hear from you on our Leafs hotline at 7:30. But before that, we've got Nick Kiprios, Kipper, Stanley Cup champ and co-host of Real Kipper and Born on the other side of the break.